You're listening to the Viral Molly Podcast. Now here's your host, Rob, on the mic.
Hey, welcome back, guys. You're watching or listening to the Viral Volley Podcast. Got Dan, friend of Lewis, got David Hunt of Pepperdine, and Jay Hosick of George Mason. We're continuing our conversation from volleyballmag.com because we are in week five of the NCAA D1-2 season, and gosh, so much is already happening. So we're going to start off with our COVID scorecard. Last week, 8 matches canceled due to COVID protocols. So a couple Conference Carolina teams and MPSF, but you know what? We're going to be back on with these teams again, hopefully with the next, actually this week with most of them. So, but I wanted to go ahead and mention that the Big West is still undefeated. All teams are still undefeated, along with David Hunt of Pepperdine. And of course, we've got Hulse of Loyola. Sorry, Dan, they're undefeated too. So, but yes, we do have some news from the Big West. The LA teams are practicing according to their social media feeds. So that's definitely encouraging to see. But also, I really get the sense that a schedule will be coming out this week, but I wanted to bounce off of you guys. What could possibly be delaying it even further at this point? I know it's kind of a surprise question on you, but I've been trying to follow this up in the last minute to see if something was going to drop even yesterday, because I really thought something was going to drop yesterday. So just your guys' thoughts on what could be happening. And we'll start with Jay on this one.
Yeah, no, I haven't been following up with any of the coaches out there. I can tell you right now, it's most likely just logistics and making sure they've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. You know, with the challenge of now having women's volleyball playing at the same time, they've got to make sure they go over every schedule. They got to make sure they go over every time. And if there is conflicting days, which happens, I think there's a number of teams that are playing dual matches on the same day, which when we get to the topic about men's and women's possibly being in the same season, I got a thought about this. But when you get to it, you got to make sure that your staff is going to be able to do both matches. And if you have another sporting event on campus, on your campus that's hosting, now all of a sudden your resources get spread apart really thin. So I think what they're doing is just making sure they've covered all the bases and they're not going to get anybody left out in the lurch without anybody to work it.
Yep. How about you, Dan?
Did the Big West, are they having women's volleyball?
No.
Nope.
Okay, that would be the only, I certainly think Jay's right on all the logistics stuff. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, that's just really probably what they're trying to feed through. Outside of that, I really don't know. I've been so focused on my own bubble. I'm not focused on that sometimes in terms of, I'm excited the Big West is playing, and I'm sure their administrators and those coaches will work through it in the next week or so here where they get things kind of off the ground and going. So I don't have anything on inside scoop to add to that. So sorry. Yeah.
How about you, David?
Yeah, I'm with these guys. I don't have any insider trading information, but I think we were probably the last MPSF school to release our schedule. You know, you gotta look at everything else that's going on your campus, travel times. Are you trying to fit in a third match, right? Because the Big West said you could schedule a third match, but it was optional. So it, you know, does that work out? Travel arrangements, is somebody flying out that day? If you're playing back-to-back, being mindful of the timing, right? You never want to play a 7 p.m. on a Friday and then 2 p.m. the next day. So yeah, the facility stuff became a big challenge, and staffing. A lot these universities don't have full staffs. So not only are having multiple events at the same time, but now they don't even have a full staff to work with. So that's been challenging.
Well, I'll tell you from my, because I've been working some basketball games here during this preseason, we'll call it, but the Big West has scheduled back-to-back games, same opponent in the venue, which I thought was interesting. Now the chatter has been that at least for men's volleyball, they're doing one home, one away. With a day separation of matches, which I think is interesting because you still have COVID protocols. What are you as coaches experiencing on the road with COVID protocols? Because you guys are, for the most part, doing the back-to-backs. We'll start with you, Dan.
Well, I think, you know, you're testing stuff before you leave. And then when you get there, you know, they did temperature checks right when they got into Ohio State, which is great. And the standard stuff. I'm amazed by that too, that they're going to split. I think what we're doing is the right thing. Like, to go in, we play Ohio State twice. Certainly the challenge for anything is our turnaround time we played 1 o'clock games, but I certainly respected that because we got home sooner on Saturday. But it was just a different feel for guys, you know, hey, you're waking up. We're not really doing a serve pass. We're just eating breakfast and going and playing. But all the protocol stuff has been, at least for that one, was great. St. Francis was good. We were doing temperature checks right before we walked in, and we have our own locker space. You know, we maybe shower on the second night in terms of when we bring our own towels. And so all that stuff's pretty streamlined. The benches are separated. Just all that protocol is all set up in there. And so that going home and away on a split day just puts a ton of stress or strain on administrating. So I'm not sure I understand that in terms of logistics, where I think this model that everybody's using, I think all three of these other conferences are all using, makes it easier in terms of that stuff. So.
How about you, David?
Yeah, I agree with Dan. And it'll be interesting to see how many teams actually, or conferences, adopt this moving forward. You know, it's been relatively low stress. Yeah, you can have some arguments in terms of who plays where and what years and, you know, what's that advantage. And MPSF's been dealing with that with BYU, and we used to deal with it with Hawaii for years. But it's sort of nice as a coach to only prep for one team, and, you know, like, this is our BYU week, and then next week's our Concordia week. And
just, you know, the BYU week, huh, David? Just
well, yeah, week. yeah, it's a cakewalk. So, I mean,
just the Gabby week, no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I only watched the first night, so those guys are, you know, cupcakes. So what's the big deal? It's from a coaching perspective, you know, I mean, I think we've all had it where, all right, you know, we're going here and then we're going, you know, and I got to watch these four different matches and we're prepping for different teams and how do we keep our team dialed in? And when you have, you know, varying levels, maybe somebody is ranked not so high and somebody else is real good. So how do we keep our team dialed in on what we're actually having to do? I do know that there is some testing protocols. As long as you're playing within 48 hours, you don't have to maybe test as much. So maybe Big West is trying to keep within that 48 hour window. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how that affects travel. So
yeah,
we'll see.
How about you, Jay?
Yeah, no, I would echo all their sentiments. I think, you know, this is our first road trip coming up this weekend. And so we have not yet gone through all of that stuff. I will say, I think the logistical challenges, you know, you're used to driving up in the bus and, you know, you get there the night before, you go to a local restaurant, you eat dinner in there, and then you go to the hotel and you're, you know, a bunch of guys are in the lobby playing cards or doing whatever. You know, that's not going to happen this year. Now you got to figure out ways to get people to deliver food and things like that, which can be a little bit of an ad challenge, not a ton, but a little. And some schools, they're not offering the showers as an option. And so now your kids are going to be forced to take a French hooker shower, you know, with a wet towel and try to get some wipes. And
from experience, you've heard, not from experience.
I've heard.
Jay hasn't played a road match in 2.5 years. So, I mean, what the hell do you know?
You're 100% correct, Dave. I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a real long time since I've taken a road trip. But, you know, those are just small things. And when you're, you know, a young guy and you're just kind of going through it, it's a little bit of a bummer. But at the same time, you'll figure it out. It's really not that big of a deal. So I think it's just about teaching your kids to just be able to adapt to things and just, you know, make the best of what you can and laugh a lot along the way. Because if you're not laughing and you're pissed off at everything, it's a real bummer.
Yeah. Well, good stuff there. I wanted to ask you, I think, David, you dropped that it as far as the cost for COVID protocols, your programs are basically taking a $10,000 per week hit. Is the number I got. But yeah. I mean, how do your programs manage, at least financially, what's happening right now? Because for those of us who are not familiar with collegiate athletics administration, it's like that money's got to come from somewhere. So I'm curious if you're able to disclose like where that comes from your budgets as the volleyball teams and coaches, or does the university actually chip in and help you out with it? I mean, what are your
experiences? I keep checking my paycheck every month, right, to make sure they're not taking it from me. And auto every deduction. Time I see RAD, I just sort of put my head down and just keep walking. I don't know where the money's coming from, quite frankly.
You had your shirt on that says, I'm with Marv?
Yeah. No, I just wear Pepperdine basketball. So, these are all the basketball guys, tall guys, they're testing them. I really don't know, you know, where the money's coming from. And it's, you know, a private institution that relies or heavily, you know, gets money from people living on campus. And there's nobody on campus for now it will be over a year, you know, in a month. So I have no idea. And, you know, state schools are in the same boat here. You know, they're all taking hits. And I have no idea where the money's coming from, quite frankly. And I'm going to hate to find out in a few months.
How about you, Dan? What are you experiencing as far as that end of
that's probably our biggest challenge. I mean, a D2 school budget wise, how are we financing testing and administratively wise, not just for our sport, but for the 22 other sports. And so they actually leaned on our county was doing testing at our facility. And so they worked in conjunction with the county for a while where they were coming out twice a week, just testing everyone in the community. And then they worked out a deal where they were helping test some of our athletes as well. And that was, we're able to kind of share some costs or cut some costs with that. And at the same time, we got a, we got an antigen machine, and then we had to buy the testing kits. But I think a lot of that's being absorbed by athletics in general, not for sport for us, which my guess is not everywhere, but I would guess a lot of places that's what's happening. It's being absorbed by the athletic department within their budgets with administrations and figuring some of that stuff out. And so I think the Power Fives live in a whole different world when it comes to that. You know what I mean? I'm sure they have a separate line for their entire athletic departments that are paying for all the testing, because a lot of them are tested daily, and the ones that are connected to hospitals and all that stuff and everything. So, but, and now we're on this Illinois Shield saliva testing thing with conjunction of University of Illinois. So it's a totally different thing, you know? And so it's just, I think you got a lot of different angles for a lot of different institutions, depending on their county stuff and their city stuff and their state stuff, that are probably working in conjunction with that. So.
Yeah. But Rob, there's, I mean, you got to look at the sports. I mean, none of us have been recruiting in a year. So there's significant. Well, yeah, man. D2, they're rogue all the time. Yeah. Us other schools, you know, that follow different protocols, we haven't been recruiting. Mm-hmm. So there's some money saved there. And then, I mean, when they cut our season last year, not just us, I mean, our whole baseball team didn't travel, mm-hmm. right? So you think about traveling 35 guys through their, you know, 40 or 50 games. So there's some savings there in terms of the athletic department. So when Dan brings up, you know, the athletic department absorbing some of those costs, I think some of the costs from the reduced travel and reduced schedules has maybe been able to offset that a little bit.
Yeah, we got our gym floor painted last summer because we didn't spend any money at the end
Shut
of the year.
Shut up, Dan. You're recruiting and your gym floor. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is great. I got a raise. That's the next
thing. You're going to make a clip
I bought a new serving machine. It's awesome. Yeah. You know, it spins balls.
I got my penthouse office on top of the gym.
Pretty much.
Are you going to make a clip of this and send it out to your recruits? What's going on? I'll tell you what, I think one of the benefits of being a team in Southern California, and Dave can definitely attest to this, when your away match is 45 minutes away and you can be home in your bed by, you know, 10:30 p.m. that's a pretty nice luxury to have. You know, the closest opponent for us is 3.5 hours away, so it's a little bit of a track. And you know, it's no slam against either one of them. It just is what it is, right? And so luckily, their budget for travel for a number of their teams will not be as impactful, because obviously it's not that ginormous of a cost compared to others. Whereas you look at teams like, you know, the MIVA and the EIVA, you know, we've all got to travel a significant distance. The biggest challenge for us this year is we normally go out the night before and get into a hotel and get bed and, you know, get into bed and wake up in the morning and not be, you know, too pressed for time. And then this year on a few of our matches, we're going out the day of our first match, which, you know, may not sound like a big deal, but when you're on a bus for 3.5-4 hours, that's not something that you want to roll out and get right into a gym with. So yeah, a little bumps and thoughts along the way, but it's nothing we can't handle, right? It's just this year, you know, at least that's what we hope. So, you know, as long as craziness doesn't ensue, then, you know, we could talk about this in folkloric style for the next 20, 30 years while we're all in our rocking chairs.
Well, let's jump back onto the court for the volleyball action in week 4. And two of the three coaches has some pretty dramatic weeks. It's a coin toss, which one I want to jump on first, but let's go to Jay because he was already talking. 5 sets, University of Charleston on that was Friday night. You know, I was, you know, watching some other matches and my little alert came up. I'm like, whoa, Jay is going the distance here. What is happening out there?
You say that like Charleston's a high school varsity team.
Oh, no, not at all. But I, you know, it's just.
I'm going to let Ian Dolan know what you said. And he's going to give you a call next week.
The problem is Jay's team is permanently. Jay's team is permanently cursed because he coaches them. So they're always going to have matches like that.
Just so you know, Rob, Iandola is a former Flyer, so I'm going to let him know as well. this guy, that's it. So.
My God, man. I know we're going after the same kids, but are you going to make a clip of that now and send it out to your kids?
Yes. Well, Dan, I saw what Dan was doing. I respect it, so I just kept playing it.
Oh, the reality is Mike Iandola has done a really nice job with that program.
Yeah.
And he has recruited well. He's coaching them up. He's given them information that probably they weren't getting in years past. And there's some stability, right? He's been there for a few years now. Yeah. So the guys kind of know what to expect. And, you know, last year we went 5 with them. And we were, you know, it was a good year for us last year. So I expected a dogfight. We went up 2-0. And I think my guys didn't take their foot off the gas. But I think Charleston picked up their game tremendously. And they pushed us. And luckily we came out in the fifth game and handled business. And the next night we're deuce games again in the first two. And, you know, we ended up winning in three. But there's absolutely no slam against Charleston. They're just a program that is on the rise. They're doing the right things. Their athletic director, Dr. Bren, does a really nice job of supporting that program. You know, and he's trying to wrestle with the fact that it's in the middle of West Virginia, but that's about it.
Well, actually I'm going somewhere because I have two other matches I'm going to mention, and there's a theme that I'm trying to bring out in our discussion. So it's not a knock on any program. I'm a fan of all the programs because you guys are doing it and I'm enjoying following the play. But the next one I want to jump to is Dan. You know, you have a blemished record now, and it's quite the battle, and you had a big night from two of your guys, and statistically you dominated every category, but still ended up losing. That is the Ohio State Lewis match on Friday night. Can you talk a little bit of what was happening that night?
Well, I certainly Ohio State's going to be, I mean, they're good. They got some young talent, and Kevin Burch is on his second year, and the guy knows what he's doing, knows how to coach. And to me, it wasn't surprising. I think the way we lost, like we just lost some points at some inopportune times. You know, we had 20 hitting errors on night one, 4 hitting errors on night two. You know what I mean? So it's just the air portion of the game on our side where we could control some things. Certainly some of it was created because Ohio State had 11 aces on us on Friday night. So you go 11 aces and 20 hitting errors, and you're losing a combined 7 points in three of the games. You're not going to win volleyball games against anybody if you're doing that. You know what I mean? And so credit to them for creating all the pressure. And Jacob Pasteur was really good for them. And so and it was a good match by them. And, you know, we can't be doing that at the end of the year. We're not going to be where we want to be. And so in first road conference game going in there, and those guys kind of kicking us in the teeth, I thought, with some stuff. And then a lot of our guys responded well the next night. So, and that was kind of the key component, is like, you take a loss like that, do you learn from it and kind of get better, or do you kind of cower down? And I thought our guys kind of jumped back up and went right after it. So,
yep. Well, the next match I'm going to mention is a MPSF match. I'll let David jump in on it first, but all of you are definitely welcome to comment on it. But I think the big shock of the nation was the upset of BYU, number one BYU by number eight UCLA. You know, that was a pretty serious, unexpected match result for sure. Dave, what are your thoughts on it? And then when Dave's done, you guys feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I think my first thought when they were announcing the lineups is you're starting to see the impacts of COVID already. UCLA had three guys that were out. So they had a different lineup out there. I believe they were out because of COVID protocols. I think that's what the BYU announcer said.
Yep.
And then BYU had their starting setter out, right? They had sprained his ankle on Monday. And then, you know, he was in a reserve role if they needed him. And miraculously Saturday, they needed him. And that whole BYU team is a bunch of veteran guys, right? Graduate students, fifth year guys, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They were playing their first match, which is, yeah, I think we're going to see some rust, not just in week one or match one. I think we're going to see it, you know, for a while as these guys get used to the season again and what it's like and the ebbs and flows of training and then playing and then getting shut down. And I think it's going to be some shocking results throughout, and hopefully by the end we have some consistent volleyball. But BYU, any doubt of them being real good I think was removed after night two. So
all right, you guys, Dan or Jay, anything to add on that?
I think if you're a volleyball fanatic and you follow men's volleyball regularly, you're gonna see a lot of changes this year. And whether that's in the lineups or whether that's in, you know, how people travel or play or the whole nine yards, the reality is also you're going to see some teams that normally dominate, maybe lose a couple of matches that on a normal year or any other given year, they might not lose. And a lot of it will have to do with COVID. I mean, you saw a perfect example of it. How long has it been since UCLA's won at BYU? It's 2009.
Nine, I think, yeah.
That's a long time to not have a victory at somebody else's gym. And largely in part due to the fact that Will Stanley was not on the court for them. And so when you're at the end of the year, nobody's going to go undefeated this year. It's just the way that it is. Maybe somebody in the Big West, but it's only because you got four matches to play. So, it's kind of easy to win four in a row. But all joking aside, I don't think anybody's going to go undefeated. I don't think anybody's going to run the table. I think there will be a couple of hiccups.
What's the difference between going undefeated and running the table?
Well, you can run the table by leading wire to wire. It doesn't mean you're going to go undefeated.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I like that.
Listen, I'm a UC graduate. I'm a banana slug at heart. Maybe I didn't go.
You're always teaching me something. I've said that for a long time now, Jay.
I don't think anybody's going to be the clear front runner throughout the entire part of the season. I think there's going to be a couple of changes. I think the usual suspects will be in the top 10, top 15. But you might see a couple of surprises sneak in at the end of the year. And I think, again, when it gets to playoff time, if your team is healthy, that's a big step in the right direction. And when it gets to that point, we'll see, all bets are off at that point anyways, but now it could be a whole new reason why.
Yep. All right, Dan, anything else to add on that?
No, I think a simple set her out. First match of the year, lots of pieces figuring out, and then a team respond well the second night. You know what I mean? And we see a couple of the performances from guys that we're expecting in terms of that. And so, but I credit to UCLA and some pieces moving around and doing some things, and Sproul and his staff about figuring that out with that. And those guys, you really saw some pretty great individual blocking moves and some individual plays in that match against BYU. And it wasn't like UCLA didn't earn it. I mean, they went earned it and scored some points at the right time and created some opportunities. So that was pretty good by those guys. But I do want to piggyback that Jay's talking about the end of the year. You just wait each week when he votes whoever number one, and we'll kind of see who crumbles down after that. But we're going to get into that topic, I'm sure. You know what I mean?
Yes, we are. So actually, that was, it's a good setup. You guys are so incredible. The question that I had for you guys was, so do you think that teams not utilizing a non-conference tune-ups, is that going to be a disadvantage for this unique season? And we'll start with, let's go back to Dan on this one.
Well, of course, but I'm not sure it's under their control. You know what I mean? So it's like, teams, I was lucky enough to schedule a couple and it worked out. Some teams weren't lucky enough, like, Purdue Fort Wayne couldn't schedule any non-conference game because of the administration. And so if Rock could have got it scheduled, he would have scheduled it. So anytime you're getting a few games in, they work through lineups and no matter what, and these guys will agree that a live match scenario playing volleyball is so much different than practice. So you're going in and playing your first one, fairly speaking, when another team's played two or three, it's a night and day difference. You're working through things every week to figure out flow and rhythm and some things that you got to tweak. Man, I didn't see that in practice. We got to work on that, or this is coming up. And there's all these things that's why you see teams get better throughout the year. And like Dave said, we're hoping we are one, healthy, and two, playing consistent volleyball at the end of the year in terms of that. And that's why there's upsets and moving pieces and all that stuff. So yeah, anybody will take the non-conference or, early matches that they can get just to get better. So
Jay.
Listen, if you only have 16 matches on your schedule or 24, the team of 24, if all things are equal, is going to have a more successful rate of winning than the team with less games. You just got more experience. You've got more things to draw from. And so I think it is what it is. Dan's absolutely right. There's nothing we could do about it. It's not like we can go out and force our administration to let us do things that they're telling us we can't do. But some teams were lucky to get a few matches in under the belt, us included, and some other teams weren't. And so by the end of the year, hopefully, things kind of even out somewhat, but there's still going to be some teams that'll have a record on, in the teens, and some teams will have, a record in the 20s. And so it just is what it is.
Yeah. And then David, anything else?
No, those guys hit it on the head.
All right. I wanted to jump back into volleyball. Although we've already talked about the BYU-UCLA match, one of the topics, actually a couple topics came up this week about the way that teams are playing. And that first night loss was an unexpected one. You know, everyone's like, oh, BYU is very powerful. They're going to dominate because of Gabby, Davide. But because their starting setter, Will Stanley, was out, the setter wasn't as experienced. Now, the debate has, the burden of that should have been taken by Gabby because he's this incredible international player. You know, he's pro level, and he should be able to adjust to the setter. Or is it the setter's responsibility for that loss? I'm curious as to your thoughts coming from a lay person, just or a fan watching the match. Because there's a lot of discussion on certain threads, we'll just call it that. So that it should have been Gabby adjusting. And me being a former setter, I take the full responsibility personally because I'm not in tempo, my mechanics are different, or I just have terrible setting. So I wanted to get your guys' take. We'll start with Dan.
I'll go first. And this is just, I mean, I look at my own team and we had Landon Krause as our starting opposite. Landon doesn't travel on our team. You know what I mean? And so he got a stomach bug and he was out the entire week, doesn't go. And then Kyle Bouget hadn't played yet. And so now all of a sudden we're trying to enter a new piece in on Friday against a good Ohio State team. And this is no excuse. It's just, I'm looking at it the same way for BYU. So all of a sudden you've got a newer setter. Maybe he's got some reps in the practice on the same side, but not as many as the previous setter by any stretch of the means. Do you know what I mean? And so now you change the flow of the game, especially in stressful situations. So we're not talking about, hey, I'm just going to set you a ball and there's one blocker on the other side. I'm running around. It's a match. It's intense. And you get a little tighter in terms of what's going on. So it just changes all that flow and dynamic. And, you know, credit to Zio, you know, true freshman going in, trying to compete at a high level and maybe didn't have the same flow that they were expecting in terms of that. And so, and then Gabby gets into this kind of weird funk and he's trying to press and trying to make things happen for his group. And so it just kind of compounds itself and, you know, UCLA capitalized in it. So we've seen it a million times with any team. You start moving a couple pieces, no matter what the level of the player is, and it just messes with the flow a little bit. And sometimes you'll see guys respond really well. That's why when coaches go, hey, I had a piece come in and I was so excited because we didn't miss a beat and the flow went really good and the team was successful. And that's tough. And then the toughest position sometimes is a setter. You know what I mean? And that they're touching the ball every single play and developing that rhythm and flow with everybody. And it's not to discredit any other position. It just happens to be how that is. And so that's just.
Wait, the center's supposed to touch the ball every single play. I got to write that down. Hang on.
That's why I have to work on passing in practice, Jay. Passing.
Listen, I'll go second only because I cracked a joke. I would agree with that 100%. Your setter, there's only one of them on the court. And so hopefully they're touching the ball every single play. But every setter is different too. You know, if you look at every roster, each setter that you have on your team is not the exact same. It's they have a different flow, a different rhythm. Some of them have a much bigger range that they can jack and jill balls all over the court from. And, you know, when you've got guys that are used to a setter being able to do certain things and the tempo and the you know, the peak of the set are all the same, it's easy to get into a rhythm and flow of them. And obviously it showed with Mayo being up there than with Will Stanley. And so you kind of look at it and go, we all know what it is. We're as coaches and as fans of the game, you kind of know that there's a little bit of a difference. And listen, there was a moment, I don't know if anybody caught it, but there was a moment in the match where you could see Gabby pull down his mask and he looked at his sir and he goes, hey, I got you. Don't worry about it. I got you. I'll adjust. But it visibly was tough for him to get into rhythm because the sets were a little bit all over the place. And so credit to Gabby for doing that and calming his setter down a little bit. I'm sure the kid was a little bit nervous and probably, you know, stressed out that he wasn't leading his team to victory at that time. But, you know, at the same time, that there's a reason why there are starters on the court most of the time. And that's because, you know, they're the ones who flow the most.
Yep. David, anything else to add?
No, I think the setter did a good job for BYU. And Gabby, I mean, he's had what, 3 years of having one person set him. And I think back to, you know, international volleyball, the Egyptian opposite goes to tournaments and tears it up And then he goes to his pro team. And if he has a different setter, he looks tragic. You know, and people are wondering, hey, what's going on? You know, why this guy just went to World Cup, was leading scorer, and his setter just knows how to keep him in rhythm, right? And it's, and those guys are playing at the professional level. So, you know, just a little bit of timing, a half step here, half step there. I mean, we even just saw it in the Super Bowl, right? The Chiefs were just a half step off. Nobody's saying, man, Patrick Mahomes, he's trash. I mean, he's still the best quarterback in the NFL. They just had a day with whatever timing and rhythm is thrown off a little bit. So those things happen. And yeah, I think the setter did a pretty good job. And at the end of the day, he's not the reason, you know, that they necessarily lost. They had three overpasses or three balls they just tanked right in the net in set four, that if they convert those, you know, they're forced in set five. So
yeah.
All
right. Good stuff there. We're going to close out before our fan question with the recent AVCA poll, which just came out, but wanted to get your guys' thoughts on where it's at. And then Jay, I know there's a subtopic that's developing because of a trend that you've caused, but what are your thoughts, gentlemen, on the recent poll that come out? I know we've had discussion in previous weeks that, you know, it's a crazy year, but yet polls are still coming out. So I wanted to get your opinions on them. So we'll start with David on this one.
Yeah, you know what? I'm just looking at Jay in my window. I'm laughing at him. I want to hear Jay's response.
How about you, Dan?
Wait, I thought we were defaulting to Jay right now. Anyway, the poll's tough. Like, so there's some shifts up and down. You know, BYU lost. Okay, maybe they're number two or they're number one. Hawaii hasn't played yet. Ohio State gets a good win against us. You know, Ball State gets two wins in conference. I mean, there's a lot of teams playing, doing some good things, and six teams or five teams that haven't played yet that are in the poll. You know what I mean? And so that's the tough part. You know what I mean in terms of that? Because I look at that and look how some other voters have gone, and I'm like, man, I could easily put some of these guys down at the bottom and push some people up that have played, and it would be okay to do that. You know what I mean? And the seven side, I'm like, well, I know these teams are good, and so. I don't know. I think it's tough as a poll voter. You're trying to do the best and find your rhythm. And I think the way Jay has done it has been great. That doesn't discredit the way I'm doing it or maybe Dave's doing it. I'm trying to stay consistent with how I started. Jay's trying to stay consistent with how he started. And so I just hope the other coaches that are doing the poll, and I think everybody's gotten there, are putting a little bit of work in it and paying attention to all the matches going on and trying to do their best job of what they think is going on. So.
I know how Jay can get out of it. Just have him put a Big West team at number one right now. See, just West team one through six.
I didn't. Dave and Dan and I are obviously on the poll committee, and there's a number of other coaches, and we're all friends. And so, you know, I don't think there's necessarily anybody who's doing it right or wrong. It's just hopefully consistent, like Dan said. You know, if you're going to go kind of one direction, hopefully your entire season you go that way, and then you don't just kind of get crazy. And I'm rewarding teams that are playing.
Well, let's go to our fan solicited question so you could respond to that then. Let me frame this because it's a great question. Sure. We'll give him credit. I cannot take any credit for this question at all. Lipton from the volleyball source of the world, apparently right now. Lipton is his handle. Here we go. Can you please ask the guys about the curse of Jay Hossack? He first voted BYU number one, and in their first match following that vote, they got upset at home by a team missing three starters. He next voted Lewis number one, and then they got upset by a team that was 1-3 coming in. The curse is clearly real, and I have a sneak feel Jay is also responsible for the aforementioned, he talks about the Sports Illustrated cover curse.
Nice.
So I don't know if you're familiar with that, but whenever an athlete has shown up or a team has shown up on the cover of Sports Illustrated, lost that week. So it continues with Jay, and we're going to have him respond to that user solicited question.
Jay also used to pick the covers for Madden. I heard that was the other thing that he used to do was he picked the Madden covers, and we all know how that went.
Yeah, Jay, I lost because of you. Totally your fault. That's why I lost. I had nothing to do with it. My guys had nothing to do with it.
Listen, I was the secret guy for Sports Illustrated back in the day when I was coaching at Santa Cruz, and I didn't have any other jobs or income, and I had to make money. you know, and that's how I did it. Speaking of making money, any of you volley talkers out there want your teams to win this weekend, I accept all donations, if you know what I'm talking about. So here's the reality. It's a lucky, ironic moment for me to pick those two teams. And obviously everybody knows that. I did pick BYU to be number one this week. I do think that with Stanley in the lineup, they are the best team in the country right now. And I rewarded the teams in the top 10 that played. And it has nothing to do with the teams that didn't play. It just says, this is what I see so far. When I start to get some data and some information and some video from some of these teams in the Big West, that when they start playing, the shuffling will start to rehappen again. And they'll be, you know, the usual suspects, depending on how they fare and how they look. I mean, listen, I know Hawaii is going to be a top three team. There's no question in my mind. But let's take into consideration, what if they have COVID for half their team? And what if half their team that's playing are all brand new freshmen that have never played before? And they go over for the entire year. Do they just get to be number three because they're Hawaii? That's not true. And that shouldn't happen like that. So I'm just rewarding what I'm seeing. And, you know, somebody had mentioned, you know, all of us are friends. And so we're throwing each other a little bit of love here and there. And it's nothing to do with it. You're seeing cross-pollination starting to happen. And the poll voters that are seeing these other teams are starting to recognize, hey, wait a minute, I'm going out and I'm playing other teams on the West Coast. And yeah, those teams are good. But hey, this team over here, Lindenwood, or this team over here, McKinsey, or this team over here, Barton, those are pretty good teams too. And maybe, just maybe, if those teams start to get hot and get a couple of victories here and there, those teams will start cracking in the top 15. It'd be real nice to see us get to a level someday where we can go to a top 25. But I wouldn't be surprised if we shrink down to a top 10. And I would be okay either way. I think there's some real validity to both arguments. But the reality is, I'm just voting who I feel at the moment is the best team. And I'm rewarding the teams that are playing versus the teams that are not, and just going on prior history. That's all I'm doing. But anyways, still taking money.
Can I add something?
As are all of we.
Hey, Rob, I want to add something Jay hit on. And this is a prime example. So NJIT at the end of last year had two or three ranked wins. Still getting in the poll. And this is the exact thing where we talk about. We're like, schools have names and certainly they're all talented, but not recognizing the games that are being played at the moment with the kids on the court then with those programs. And it was really hard for them to get cracked in after these wins. And then I think they ended up receiving votes, but they should have been in the top 15. And I think that's the thing where we talk about, are you really doing your due diligence about the games being played in front of you? Or are you just going by the names of the schools in terms of that stuff? And so making sure people are paying attention to that sometimes. And so,
yeah. And I'll go one step even further, you know, back in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, if you want, you know, there was a West Coast bias that was pretty valid. I mean, there were obviously good teams in the Midwest. Don't get me wrong. Ohio State, Lewis in the early 2000s was good, and Ball State forever has been a solid program. Penn State obviously has been a solid program. But the reality was is that the majority of kids went out to the West Coast to play, and that's where the best level of volleyball was from top to bottom. Now you start to look at all the changes of all the teams that have been winning championships and teams that are in the finals and the teams that are constantly beating other teams across the board. Those teams aren't located all on the West Coast still. Are there still good teams out there? Of course there is. It's not like they just dropped off the face of the map. But the reality is there's more young boys playing volleyball. There's more good level recruits and there's more places for them to go. This is what we've been talking about for the last 15, 20 years of growing the game. And you're starting to see the fruits of that labor. And so these kids that used to be in the Midwest and the East Coast that would, you know, they talk to Ohio State, they talk to Penn State and go, yeah, I like your school and I want to go, but my dream is to go out west and I want to play somebody out there. Even if they went to a no-name, kind of a low-level D1 program, they could say they went West Coast. Well, now the kids on the West Coast are saying, well, I can either be the number 8 outside hitter on this team that's won a few championships, or I can go out west or out east or out in the Midwest, play in a high-level caliber team, get a great education just like I would if I stayed home, and I get a chance to crack into the lineup possibly because there's not as many kids that are all, you know, causing the bottleneck. And that is a testament to the coaches because they are all really good coaches. And it's a testament to the program supporting their program, the administration supporting their programs. They can go out and recruit internationally. They can go out across the country and see more tournaments. This is what we've been talking about. And it's not perfect. And it's not the same all the time, but this is how the trend is going. And so that's really, it's exciting to see. And I love hearing about these smaller programs like NJIT and like Barton going out and beating some big name teams. How cool was it last year that Barton beat USC? How cool is that? Now, USC was having a down year to some degree, but it's still USC. And yeah. Barton is still Barton. That is a cool story.
Well, some great stuff this week. Wanted to see with you guys, is there any topic we've missed this last week that have flown under the radar that you want to bring up? Are we good? All right.
I think we're good.
All right, gentlemen. Good luck this week, gentlemen. I appreciate you guys always contributing to or being a huge part of the Vol Volley podcast and College Volleyball Weekly. Got some good stuff coming up this week. Good luck to all of you and be safe in your travels. And, you know, big one. I'm going to be watching that one up in Malibu. Or actually, you're traveling, right? You're traveling.
We're traveling. First time traveling. So I'll let you guys know next week how that goes and what it's like to get on a plane. Yeah.
All right. Good luck, guys.
All right, gentlemen, thank you, and appreciate your contributions, and we'll talk next week. Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Viral Volley Podcast. Be sure to follow Rob at Rob on the Mic on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or at robonthemic.com. Check you next time.